With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Backcountry PA Podcast. This is episode 109. On this one, myself, Ethan, and Patrick, we sit down and we chat with Justin Hunold. He is a PA hunter by where he lives, but he primarily hunts in New Jersey and New York. It's quicker for him to get to New Jersey than it is to get to public land here in PA. It was a great chat with Justin. Pretty much the topics we cover in this episode, we talk about mobile hunting, the mobile fanatic with Trophy Line. We talk about what hunting in New York is like and the process behind getting a tag for up there, because Ethan and I have thought about going up there down the road, maybe the next year or two, just to hunt because our cabins are very close to the New York border. We talk about family and hunting, and then we also talk about hunting in New Jersey and what it's like to be baiting in New Jersey, because we don't do that here in PA. So we wanted to touch on that with Justin, because him and I have had a conversation about that. You know, he wasn't baiting at first, but then he started to because everyone else is doing it. So like, if everyone else is doing it, you have all these trail cam pictures in the off season of deer coming through on a regular pattern, and then come the season, everyone's in the woods with bait and they're going there. So that was an interesting topic to talk about. But all in all, it was a great conversation with Justin. We hope you guys enjoy this episode. We hope you guys are having a killer time out in the Whitetail Woods. I want to remind you guys, we do have hoodies on our website. In our bio, it'll take you right to our link tree. You go to our website, and then you can go to our shopping page, and it'll take you to the Etsy page. I want to remind you guys to keep hunting, keep fishing, keep fishing, and always enjoy the freaking process.
There was a group of friends from Pennsylvania that loved nature. They wanted to become better woodsmen.
I was laying on the couch with my wife, zooming in and out of Onyx.
Anglers.
If you have a nice-sized trout, they can give a fight, at least according to the book.
And outdoorsmen.
Basically the grocery store. Fresh groceries.
Stories turn into legends, and legends turn into traditions.
Very German.
This is the Backcountry PA Podcast.
Don't forget all of the shitty stuff you don't want to do during the year. Don't let that displace the thing that you actually want to do. Does it suck to wake up at 3:30 in the morning sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
It sure does.
I'm Cody.
I'm Ethan.
Oh, hi.
I was going to introduce myself.
We got Patrick. Welcome to the Backcountry PA
Podcast. Such a delay.
Welcome to the Backcountry PA Podcast. Justin, do you want to introduce yourself to us and the listeners? Who you are, how you got into hunting, all that good stuff.
Yeah. My name is Justin Hunold. I suppose in the hunting realm, I am a self-proclaimed outdoor writer. I write and participate in like the ambassador program for Trophy Line, Retay Shotguns, and Spartan Forge. Those are my, you know, if you were going to look me up, that's where you'd find me. And I'm like a vagabond traveling whitetail hunter. And I got into hunting from the time I started hunting when I was like six with my dad, sort of following him out like everybody else does. And then, kind of moved on from there with my uncles and my family. And I left where I was from I would say at a fairly young age to kind of pick up and do my own thing. And from there, I had to learn how to hunt in other places and like learn the culture and kind of get with other people mm-hmm. and figure out sort of my own path, so yeah. to speak. So I've really concentrated on, I'm not going to profess to be the biggest buck killer in the world. I'm not. I just really enjoy hunting. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy providing food for my family and getting out. And, you know, if you were to, I guess, look, I have a feature in the Mobile Fanatic. So that's Trophy Line's sort of newest venture in mobile hunting. And really mine has to do with like the history of mobile hunting, the culture of mobile hunting, and just the ins and it's not as technical as everybody else's. It's right. It's more like, hey man, this is what this is, and this is what it means to all of us. Mm-hmm. So that sort of culture side, and then again, the food side of it is huge to me.
Oh yeah.
So I'm just a passionate whitetail hunter and generalist in the hunting community. And fishing as well, but just yeah, that's kind of how it is. Grew up hunting and can't imagine. I've given up all my other hobbies except for hunting. That's the one that sticks. So if I had to eliminate everything else, that's the one that's still here.
Amen, man. So. Amen. So since you talked about the Mobile Fanatic, do you know the background of mobile hunting? Like when did that, like, I'm sure it's always been around, but like when did it actually really become a huge thing?
So yeah, you know, interestingly, Fanatic is a term from like the hunting culture. It's the culture of hunting, not the culture of hunting modern, but like if you're a hunting culture, I don't care if you're in the Amazon, or you're Native American culture, or you're the 40,000-year-old cave paintings in France culture, that's a Fanatic culture, meaning you're a hunting culture that moves around. So like the Plains Natives were a Fanatic culture. Okay. And you follow the game. So that's kind of where it comes from, right? And you could argue that that's the history, but if we're talking whitetails, mm-hmm. I really believe that the first mobile hunting sort of like definition that we run today would really come around in that sort of, man, I would argue like that sort of Mel Johnson period, like that late 1950s, early 1960s.
Yeah.
And then go from there with huge revolutions in between. That kind of move the whole mobile hunting, so to speak, forward, right?
Right.
And sometimes you see it. It could be like the compound bow.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the tree stand. It could be you have to think of all these things that we commonly use today that were revolutionary when you saw them: radom antlers, right. Grunt tubes, tree stands, compound mm-hmm. bow, scents. Mm-hmm. All these things that we just take common, so commonplace that sometimes it becomes a hindrance and we leave them at home. Like, you know, how many deer have heard rattling antlers on public land? Well, at one point, no deer had heard rattling antlers on public land. Somebody did that first. Right. So I kind of like dive into that. But I really think that that goes back to when you start seeing people using their woodsmanship, finding spots within the spots in the woods over mm-hmm. years of observation. And slapping some tree stands up there. I don't think they weren't mobile because they built a tree stand. You know, they couldn't go out and buy a saddle. They couldn't buy a Fanatic saddle and a platform and get mm-hmm. out there, and move from spot to spot. But what they could do is they could read the terrain and the ground and the movements and understand animal behavior and pick a few spots to put some concerted effort in. And I think that's probably where the start was. And like I said, I would venture to say the way we define it, mobile hunting started in the late 50s to early 60s.
Yeah. I definitely think the mobile game has always been a thing. But I think, in 1950s, 1960s, that kind of era is when, like, people became more mobile for whitetails, put it that way. Like, right. I think it's always been, like, you know, when you think mobile, you think, like, hang-on stands that are under 10 pounds or you think the saddle or you think like something in that regards, but like
right.
really I think the real mobile thing is on the ground. So like if you're just a ground hunter, you're extremely mobile then because you don't have to worry about all that other stuff you're taking with you. Like, Ethan likes to hunt from the ground a lot.
Yep. I've been a mobile hunter for 15 years and just now getting into a tree, and your keyword there with the hang-ons,
mm-hmm.
under 10 pounds.
Yeah.
This is my first year hunting out of a tree. I have a hang-on that's 17 pounds. Yeah, I'm more mobile stand walking than I am trying to get that.
And to that point, if you look back like into the 1970s, the Benoists, who are famous trackers, world famous trackers from like, and I say world famous because at one point apparently they were on a Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh,
like,
geez.
They're world famous trackers from the New England area.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, Larry, the father who wrote a book, How to Bag the Biggest Buck of Your Life, he was on the cover of Field and Stream, and literally the quote is, this the best deer hunter in America, roughly. Like, I don't know the exact quote, but that's the question, right? And all they did was track whitetails.
Mm-hmm.
Cut a track and follow that deer until you couldn't follow him anymore or you shot him. Those were your two options. You know what I mean? Did it get dark and you can't follow any further, or did you kill that deer? Those are your two options.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get any more mobile than that. So, you know, that's existed probably as long as humans have been chasing whitetails, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
But with that, yeah, for sure. You know, when I go on my trips, I always carry a ghillie suit with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I even wear it every time I'm on the ground, but if there's some concerted, like, concentrated ground sits where I know that's what I'm doing for that morning or that evening or that time.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't discount that at all. It's, mm-hmm. it's a super effective tactic, actually.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. The only reason I brought that up is because, like, way back in like the caveman days, you know, that was how they were mobile. Like, I think mobile changes with the time of whatever time or period you're in. I think that's what changes, but mobile hunting has changed a lot. Like, I got a trophy line saddle, so like I'm in that. It's like, it's crazy how quick you can put that up and how quiet you can be when you do it correctly.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Yeah. It's amazing how bad you can mess it up too, far as the quick and quiet goes, if you hadn't practiced or done anything. You know, everyone's first sit of the year is always bad, right? So like, even my first sit, and I spend I would say I spend more time in a saddle over the year than a lot of folks,
right?
Due to you know, going to events and stuff like that, and just kind of doing that sort of thing. With that, I think it was the second night I was out. I was like, oh, look at that! I just banged all my sticks together and forgot my headlamp. So, you know, you can prepare as much as you want, mm-hmm. to, and you still mess it up a good portion of the time. But yeah, like I went from, you know, hunting basically exclusively off the ground,
mm-hmm.
to getting climbers just like everybody else, to then hunting off out of climbers and some preset lock-ons. And this is all on public land. I had a little bit of private land to hunt on, but mostly public.
Yeah.
To then, you know, I'll say this, I worked in a sporting goods store when trophy line was out in like that 2008-2009 mm-hmm. period, and you could not display them. You couldn't show somebody how to hunt out of one of those in a store,
right? Yeah,
because once you open the package, you're done.
Yep.
So understanding what that looked like and being intrigued by the idea but never buying into it all the way, I ended up building my own saddle when the whole saddle craze, I'll say, started again.
Mm-hmm.
So from like late 16 on, I was basically exclusively saddle. Now, that being said, we didn't get our first ambush lights until 2019. So there was about 3 years there where I was hanging out of homemade saddles,
mm-hmm.
because I just said, this is the most compact, lightest, quietest way to hunt. Yeah. And really, we get in that big chasing the ounces sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The sound and the compactness were the things that I really concentrate on. That was like, oh, this is the way to go for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm all over the place, and I'm packing in not always a super long way. The other day I was sitting 20 yards off the road.
Yeah.
It all has to do with where the deer are, and that's where mobile hunting is, right? Like, it's where are the deer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that. So my first sit was opening day, October 1st, and surprisingly, I was very proud with how I got up because I practiced three times over the summer, like setting up my stand, I mean, my sticks, and then my platform, and getting up there, getting the saddle, all that kind of stuff, shooting from it. I mean, when I got in there, I was quiet, you know, didn't really bang anything around. I got up there, set up perfectly 45 minutes before light, and I was like, man, that was actually a lot easier than, like, Ethan and I just talked about him hanging a stand by himself, and, like, hanging this by yourself is a lot easier than a stand. So it was, the mobile game can't get any better than with a saddle. I can't see getting any better with us other than a saddle.
It's a huge tool in the toolbox, mm-hmm. and I use all the tools, right?
Yep.
So I do have a Novix mm-hmm. Helio,
mm-hmm.
and I use that in certain situations. But where I run into a tough time with that is I'm so used to setting.
Yep.
My trophy line stuff now. That Novix is just a little bit outside of the realm of familiarity, if that makes sense. Like, I'm carrying it, and I know how to use it, and I've used it 100 times, but it takes a quick mental reset in the morning when I look at it and go, all right, this is what I'm taking today.
Yeah.
And just even looking at a setup from the ground, because a lot of times I'm walking into a spot I have not been before,
mm-hmm.
and looking at a setup from the ground going, okay, I'm used to setting up for a saddle, and just debating what side of the tree do I want to be on? What, right. you know, what is the gap I need between branches to set mm-hmm. up properly in this thing? Those sort of things are like a different sort of thing now. But yeah, I, if you put me to one, I'm taking my saddle. Like, if I'm going into a brand new spot I've never been, mm-hmm. I'm taking my saddle.
Oh yeah.
I'm taking my saddle. I'm taking an EDP, and I'm taking my sticks, and that's what I'm taking.
Yep.
And I'm saying that because, I feel the most confident that I can hunt out of any tree in that situation with that stuff. That's why.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm glad I went the day before. Like, I went up, me and my dad went up the Friday before opening day, and I was like, I'm going to go out, find a spot, I'm going to set up the hang on. And after setting up the hang on, like, I took my time. I didn't practice with it as much as I probably should have over the summer, you know, setting up by myself. So it took me a little longer to set it up, but I just was making sure, like, I'm gotta be quiet. I'm not gonna clanking this thing around. And I was like, I figured if I can set this up, use it for the whole season, I mean I'm always gonna complain about it being heavy. That's just a given. But mm-hmm. if I embrace the suck, you know, next year I'm definitely gonna upgrade and get mm-hmm. a lot lighter one, and I'm like, if I can handle this, then I'll be, you know, better.
Yeah. The thing is, using a 17-pound stand, everything after that's better.
Right? Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So that I'll say that with the saddle. When I was using like a sit drag as my saddle
mm-hmm.
and a set of, you know, steel climbing sticks you could buy from Runnings or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things of like, yeah, everything after this is so much better.
Yeah.
So I knew once I, like you said, embraced the suck and worked hard at it,
mm-hmm.
spent a couple seasons hunting out of that bullshit. After that, everything was awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that now I'm hunting out of I think my Venatic, my ropes, my carabiners, all the hardware together is like 3.8 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. This is awesome.
Much lighter.
Awesome. You know, yeah. So much lighter and so much quieter and so much, it's so much better. So, it, you know, I know this is not just all about the mobile hunting, but that's such a huge part of what I do.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't do what I do as far as, like, have the experiences I have mm-hmm. if I wasn't kind of bringing those tools to the table. But, I do, you know, as much as I'm sitting here in a trophy line hat and I'll beat that drum all day long, mm-hmm. all day long, proudly, happily, I will beat that drum. I still use a tree stand.
Yep.
About 15 to 20% of the time I'm in a tree stand and I'm still on the ground a good 15 to 20% of the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say it's 50-50, whether I'm in a saddle or not, it's probably 60-40.
Right.
And those other two times it's 50-50, whether I'm in a tree stand or on the ground, but, you know, it's split between those things. And if given one, I'm going into a totally blind situation. I'm taking a saddle, platform, and sticks. That's what I'm taking.
Hello and welcome back to Backcountry PA News. My name is Mr. America. Let's get into it. So this first one, we're going to pull from the biologicaldiversity.org website. This is the Center for Biological Diversity, and they are the ones who released a DNA report on a wolf that was killed in New York, originally thought to be a coyote, was actually found to be a gray wolf, or at least had very strong heritage from both gray wolf, Great Lakes, and Northwest Territory wolf DNA. They believe that because of New York's proximity to Canada, that there could be wolves that were migrating around the border and made their way into New York could be found in some parts of Northeast the U.S., and at least 10 other wolves have been killed south of the St. Lawrence River, which is what the wolves would have to cross to get down into New York. They thought it was a barrier that would be too strong and would keep the wolves out, but it doesn't seem to have made that difference. No word, funnily enough, on what happened with the hunter. They did agree to provide a sample of DNA so that the center could test this animal. This was about over a year ago that this wolf was killed. So we'll be watching to see. It does look like there's possibility that wolves could start to be found in New York. Will probably still be protected for a long while, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with this one. This next one is a quicker one. It's from the Bemidji Pioneer.com. That's Bemidji Pioneer. A Minnesota boy, 12 years old, dies from gunshot wound in hunting accident. Not a lot of details on this one. He died on Sunday, October 9th. He was hunting for squirrels with some family members, and he was shot by his 47-year-old uncle. That's in St. Paul, Minnesota. So really just wanted to bring this one up to remind you, please be safe while you're out there hunting. Make sure that you're wearing the appropriate orange when required. Make sure that you're keeping in touch with your family and your friends when you're going out on longer hunts where you have to hike and get away. And just remember, while you're keeping your tradition, stay safe out there. This last one comes from usnews.com. Forever Chemicals in Deer, Fish Challenge Hunters and Tourism. Wildlife agencies in the U.S. are finding elevated levels of a class of toxic chemicals in game animals, such as deer. So this one, I'll just preface this one by letting you know that it is both something to be aware of and something to not be too concerned about. And I'll tell you why. So there are these chemicals that they call forever chemicals. Or you could also call them by their technical name, which is PFAs, or polyfluoroalkyl substances in deer in several states. They found them in Michigan and Maine, or just a couple of states that they found them in. But particularly, those states that accumulate a lot of water. I think water pollution is probably where a lot of these things are coming from, but they've been discovering these chemicals in wild animals. They're often used in nonstick cookware and clothing, industrial type compounds, very, very strong, and they last a long time. So the EPA launched an effort to limit the pollution from these chemicals, and they have also said that it can be linked to health problems, including cancer and low birth weight. And the reason that this is concerning is because it's reaching points that the deer and the fish in the wildlife further inland in these places like Maine and in Michigan that maybe have these large bodies of water but are otherwise landlocked, they're experiencing the first exposure to these chemicals. And these chemicals will get processed by the liver because they get into the blood and then the liver will process them, but they can't really dispose of them. So they just accumulate there. And after a while, this can be really dangerous, of course, to both humans and to these animals. And so a lot of different areas have been launching a do not eat advisory when they do find these particular chemicals in animals. A lot of new laws are being directed at these particular chemicals. In Maine, these chemicals were detected in water hundreds of times. So legislators passed a law that manufacturers will have to phase out these chemicals. First of all, report their use and then phase them out by 2030. And there are people that have said that this could become a standard for a lot of other different states within the U.S. But what's probably going to happen is they're going to phase it out, see if there's a way that we can recover. But at this point, it's safe enough to say that in a lot of places, it's likely that you might be already exposed to some of these chemicals. Not saying that you should, you know, eat more or continue, you know, just go about life like you would any other day, but just pay attention to these small details, especially in the areas that you're going hunting in. We've talked about CWD, we've talked about blue tongue, and you know, some of these things that are more potentially dangerous to animals, of course, but also just being aware of what's going on with the environment in your area where you go hunting and what the requirements are to make sure that you're not contributing to the spread of something like CWD or PFAS, and just making sure that you're aware for your own safety as well. If you eat deer liver with PFAS, it's very dangerous and not good for your health. I want to thank you so much for joining me up until this point. It's really been a pleasure. Remember to stay safe once again and keep your tradition.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, I have a stand set up that I have already pre-hung, so if I have a quick hunt, I'll probably go there. But, you know, saddle is like 90% of the time right now because it's so, it is mobile. But, I mean, let's get into why you're so mobile, because when we talked at Lancaster Archery, I believe that was in, was that July, June, July, yeah, something like that?
July. Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking and you were like, yeah, I traveled to New York and New Jersey like just for quick trips. And I really want to, and you live in PA, correct?
Yeah, so I live in Southeast PA.
Yeah.
Kind of between Philadelphia and New York City, honestly.
Yeah.
And I hunt in, for all intents and purposes, I don't hunt in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I hunt in New Jersey and New York.
Yeah.
And I will take a roughly 10-day trip to Ohio.
Okay.
It is closer for me to drive to New Jersey than hunt public land in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
With Sunday hunting included.
Yeah, yeah.
And where I hunt unlimited doe tags in $2 a year.
Man, that's, oh, wow. It's closer for
me. It's closer for me to go there
mm-hmm.
than it is for me to drive to the closest public land in Pennsylvania.
I was going to say, because, yeah, down near you, I could picture where you are, since you're where you said you're close between Philly and New York. So, I mean, yep. It's...
I'm right across the bridge from Trenton.
Yeah, there's not much public right there. Like, that's the thing. Like, and they, but apparently there's a lot of deer. Isn't there a lot of deer down in the area? There's just nowhere to hunt them at?
Right. So, where I live in, they call it, you know, like, Lower Bucks County.
Yeah.
Yep. So, like, Doylestown to the east.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's no public land. There's not.
Yeah.
Not like in that way. There's some. There's some parks you can hunt in, and there's some special permit areas and stuff like that. I don't want to say it's totally like non-existent.
Right.
That would be a lot.
Yeah.
But most of it lies west of me. Mm-hmm. Most of the public land lies west of me. And I'm driving like an hour to get there. I might still be in the same county, but I'm driving like an hour to get there.
Right. Yeah. And plus with traffic, too. I mean, traffic adds on there. It's hell in there.
So you're talking, you know, I was just in Philly. You're talking the city of 5 million people. Mm-hmm. And the greater Philadelphia area is 7 million people. So, yeah, traffic alone, you're driving 30 miles. It's going to take you an hour and a half.
Exactly.
So what I found was within 25 minutes of me, if I go to the other side of the river and I head to New Jersey, I'm on 7,000 to 8,000 acres of public land like that, you know.
Wow.
And that's one good chunk. There's mm-hmm. more. There's a lot more over there. And I don't want to blow New Jersey up, but you know, I don't think that many people are gonna find that a destination sort of place.
Right.
So
yeah.
So yeah, I say I forego Pennsylvania. Because I'm originally from upstate New York, mm-hmm. and I do spend a good amount of time going back there with my family and hunting. That my main hunting partner is my cousin, and he's in basically Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend a ton of time hunting together, and we do that in New York.
Okay.
If you give me, like this weekend we were talking before this all started, Sunday night, I was in New Jersey, I was hunting.
Yeah.
Monday, I was hunting in New Jersey. That's 20 minutes from my house. I can be up the stand. I worked until 4 on Monday and still got up in the stand Monday evening by like 5. Well, last shooting light ends at 7:08, I think mm-hmm. it was.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I still got a couple hours, you know, yeah. I'm still in the stand. Yep. That wouldn't be possible if I only hunted in Pennsylvania.
Very true.
That wouldn't have been all a hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So I plan a lot of my season around that sort of travel where I'm making, you know, 20-minute drives, but I'll also make a 4 or 5 hour drive to be in a place I'm familiar with or I have some history with or something like that, New York. And vice versa, you know, that Ohio trip, we've made it a few times, and that takes me about 7 hours, 8 hours to get there.
Okay.
But once I'm there, you know, it's still public land, it's still all public access, and it's still all mobile. So it's just mobile hunting fits the way I've sort of tailored my hunting existence, if right. that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you go to Jersey, now that you've been hunting it for years now, what are you looking for? Like when you go there, because we were talking and they bait there and you kind
of
got...
So let's define the amount of time I've been hunting there. I haven't even been hunting there a year yet.
Oh, well, shit. I'm stupid.
So no, it's fine.
You liar.
Because this is a plug I'm going to make. I went to a pint night for backcountry hunters and anglers. I met my buddy Scott there. And he's like, yeah, man, I mostly hunt in New Jersey. We live not far apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, tell me about that. Because I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always like a barrier to entry.
Absolutely,
no matter where you go. A barrier to entry. Like, if you think moving to Pennsylvania and figuring out freaking pink envelopes and that I can't hunt on Sunday made any sense to me in the world, I was like, what? What year is this? First of all, like, it made no sense. So, like, that Amen. Barrier to entry, whether Amen. You agree with those things or not, is still a real thing.
Yeah.
So, in Jersey, I said to Scott, you know, over a couple of beers, I was like, explain this thing to me. Like, how does this work? He's like, dude, you just go to Walmart, buy a hunting license. You can shoot 2 bucks. There's different seasons. And every once in a while, I'll still shoot him a question. Like last year was like, hey, can I hunt on Sunday here? And he's like, yep, you should be good there.
Yeah.
Because it's all about like interpreting the laws you're reading, right? As a person who owns multiple states a year, it's like, okay, I'm reading it this way. Is somebody else reading it this way?
Right.
How are you reading this law?
Is this a gray area?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Is Johnny Green Jeans coming to get me?
Yeah. You
know, like,
yeah.
That's what I want to know. So with that, you know, I'll say I went to a pint night for BHA, like I said, and I think that as much as I pound on that hunting culture, that's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody knows something you don't.
Oh yeah.
So for me, I got with Scott and he kind of explained the ins and outs to me and I asked him questions along the way. I was just like, man, this is so much easier. This is 20 minutes from my house and there's thousands of acres.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, I started hunting there, and it was, like, unsuccessful at the end of the year last year, And I'll say what's cool is I was hunting in January, still there.
Yeah. You
know? Their season's very long. So I've already been hunting for weeks.
Because it starts in
mid-September, basically.
Okay, all right.
It's earn a buck for the month of September.
Okay.
So you have to shoot a doe first, and you are allowed to bait on public land, private land, whatever. So back to your question, baiting.
Yeah.
I have never been a big advocate of baiting. I hunted North Carolina. I lived in North Carolina, hunted there. You could bait there. I did it a little bit with my buddies. I was just like, man, this is not my jam.
Yeah.
Well, I have become, I would say, you know, like hunting acquaintances with Corey Anderson, who's about to knock a dude out for the Bellator light heavyweight championship.
Yep.
And you know, we chat fairly often, and he hunts in New Jersey because that's where his camp is based, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking back and forth. I was like, yeah, man, I got these deer on camera. They're on a pattern. I'm going to go in there. And then literally one morning I walk through, I'm on camera. Bunch of deer walk through, they're on camera. Another guy walks through with a backpack. You can just tell it's stuffed full of something, right?
Yeah.
He walks through. I don't get a deer on camera for another 4 days.
Oh.
So I kind of text Corey. He's like, yeah, man, that bag was full of corn, and you got to do that, or else it totally shifts the pattern of the deer.
Yep.
It completely shifts the pattern of the deer. So, and it's noticeable to the fact that I get very concentrated time to hunt, so I will lay down some bait, and the deer will get on that bait, and then when the bait goes away, the deer go away.
Yeah.
So I've come to sort of learn, like, it's a game of, like, constantly keeping up on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's interesting. I don't love it. I'm trying to be sort of indifferent to it, if it makes sense.
Right.
And understand it's part of the, as I talked about culture, that's part of the culture there.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's like we, I don't know. Cause like we were talking, like we didn't grow up around it. Like I didn't grow up around baiting, all that kind of stuff. Like, and with CWD, it probably won't come back in here too much in PA. So do you think, with baiting in New Jersey, do you think CWD would have an effect on that at all, that you could ever see baiting going away forever?
I don't know. They had their laws are so much more liberal as far as the deer population. I don't think is in Pennsylvania. I'll say this. I think the deer population is looked upon as an asset.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so highly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, APR. They make it semi-hard to get doe permits. It's not actually hard, but it's one of those things that, like, yeah, you got to kind of know the system.
Right.
No Sunday hunting. Now, I know there's other things that go into the Sunday hunting thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The culture of deer hunting is so ingrained in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That I believe it's looked at as an asset. The whitetails are looked at as an asset.
Yep.
In so many ways. In New Jersey, I don't even think they're thought about.
Like a nuisance. Way.
Not a nuisance or just indifference.
Yeah.
Like, we have hunters and that exists, so we have to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, because if they were a nuisance, they'd be looked at like the black bears that you're not allowed to hunt, but they'll attack somebody on Rutgers campus, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a nuisance.
Yeah.
They actually kill people. Not, you know, deer damage does an insane amount every year, but it's not. Yeah, so I don't know if CWD... You know, they had an EHD outbreak last year, and I've spent a lot of time in an area that should have, like, biologists, or I should have seen a game warden, or I've seen none of that.
Yeah.
None of it. And I'm there all the time.
Wow.
So I don't know how that plays into what their decision-making process.
Yeah, it's very different for each state, I think. Like, it's
for sure.
Like, you'll hear in PA, like, CWD is a big thing. Like, and they try and get rid of the scents. They try to get rid of the deer urine, from spraying stuff on licking branches. Then you go down to Maryland or to New Jersey or somewhere else, and it's like, it's not talked about as much. It's just so weird how, like, you know, you want it to, like, I feel like state representatives don't think that other deer from other states will cross over to other states.
Yeah, so...
They know the lines. They know the state borders.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly not putting them on a plane and taking them up anyplace. We're not pulling a DeSantis with deer, but with that being said, you know, I get a letter from New York every year that says you can't take this deer from this state into Pennsylvania on bone.
Okay, yeah.
I same thing in Ohio. If I shoot a deer in Ohio, I have to have it boned out and you know, taken down to its smallest components possible.
Yeah.
Before I bring it to Pennsylvania. So there's aspects to that, but I feel like that's Pennsylvania. New York's very proactive with that sort of thing in their whitetail population.
Yeah.
New Jersey just seems to just like, and I think it's just an amount of like the culture, the cultural difference between these two bordering states. So you take New York and Pennsylvania, they have two of the highest hunting populations of any states in the country.
Yeah. Yes.
In bow hunting specifically,
I'm
in Michigan. It's not even close. It's like those three states, you know, they talk about Wisconsin opening day of gun season. That's a thing. But you talk about total hunting population. Those three states basically trump everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially in PA here, it's the Orange Army. Like, I think bow hunting is catching up, but I think the Orange Army is still like outnumbering.
Oh, it's not even close,
yeah. Yeah, but then again, you have archery hunters that are also the Orange Army. So, I mean...
Yeah, then they don't do archery hunting up in my cabin, apparently.
Yeah.
I was up. Nobody. I mean, people were up. It's opening day, right? I expect to see people out in the woods. No, we got people shooting guns, and we're not talking hunting, shooting guns. We're talking just shooting things. Shooting I don't know guns. What they're shooting at, but they're shooting. Music... yelling, people were doing construction on cabins and stuff, and it's like, do they not know it's opening day statewide of archery? Like, they don't do that. They don't care about that up there. But come Saturday after Thanksgiving, orange.
Yeah.
It, New York's very similar in that way. the culture.
Yeah.
I will say, like, that sort of just... disregard for opening day archery is very similar to northern New York. So New York's it has zones just like Pennsylvania, but it's split into a northern tier and a southern tier.
Okay.
In northern tier, rifle, full on rifle opens the third Saturday of October. That's when it opens.
What?
And muzzleloaders the weekend before that. So you're talking, you're hunting with a gun in your hand from mid-October until the first week of December. So,
wow.
But the deer density is so light in a lot of that area. You know, part of northern tier is just north of Syracuse, but you start getting into the true northern tier, that's in the Adirondacks. You're talking one deer per square mile.
Right. Yeah, that's a low density right there.
So what's the point of archery hunting, right?
Yeah.
Like, not to be weird, but that's kind of how they view it. Like, why am I bow hunting if bow hunting comes in September 27th and I'm only doing it for 15 days? What's the point? I'll just go out in October with my muzzleloader and then hit it hard.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even issue doe tags in most of that place. Most
Holy
of that territory
crap.
Of the state.
Wow.
So in New York, and this is going to sound really crazy, but there's a state park called Adirondack State Park. And I hunt in it for part of the year.
Yeah.
That state park is larger than the largest national park. So the Denali National, I don't care, Yellowstone, whatever.
Yeah.
The Adirondack State Park in New York. So you guys are not far from it, really, as the crow flies. I'm not far from it as the crow flies. Is larger than both of those.
Holy crap.
Not added together or anything, but it's huge.
Yeah.
And a huge chunk of that is forever wild. So you get up there. It's not managed for timber. It's not burned. It's not cut. You're not going to find a clear cut. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There's no roads. If you're getting in there, you're hiking it, and you're hiking it for miles.
Oh, man.
So understand that there's deer there that have never seen a person.
That sounds fun.
They just haven't. It's fun in like a way of like if you accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
You can sit down at a conversation like this and go, yeah, I accomplished something nobody else here has.
Right. Yeah.
And it's fun in that type too, like embrace the suck sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. Like, don't get me wrong. I go up there for that exact thing.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But as you said, there's in that section, there's parts that have Orange Army.
Mm-hmm.
But we say Orange Army as far as like, yeah, there's people that only gun hunt and they have no reason to bow hunt because by mid-October, they're gun hunting anyway.
Yep. Know? Yep. Okay. So let's get back to Jersey now. You live in PA. No, you're good. We always go down the rabbit holes.
I know. I wanted to learn about, because I was even thinking about hunting New York. My cabin's up.
Yeah, dude. I can tell you there's like different seasons, different places, different things.
Yeah.
It's very different. Sorry. But yeah, it's totally. Totally different.
Ethan, don't worry. We'll get to New York.
We'll get to New York.
We'll get to New York after Jersey.
Let's backtrack here real quick.
So going from PA to Jersey, you obviously have to get a non-resident tag in New Jersey. So, one, how much does that cost to get a non-resident tag in New Jersey?
So, a non-resident tag for archery is $135.
Okay. All right.
There's, and forgive me for not knowing the exact number, but like there's a second season that's like in December and I have to buy another tag. I think that's like $28 or something like that. It's not crazy expensive, right?
Right.
And with that non-resident bow tag, I get $1 and I get basically unlimited does. I have to go back and buy doe tags as I go.
Okay.
But I get unlimited antlerless and $1 tag. Wow. And then there's seasonal archery tags after that, that I can go get a basically like a wintertime buck tag and then multiple doe tags after that. So it's all how much you want to spend as far as does go.
Yeah. But how much is a doe tag?
What's that?
How much is the doe tag?
I don't know. I've never bought more than one. So,
okay.
So you know, it's one of those things of to get in the door in Jersey for a whole season is $135. It's not crazy expensive.
That's dirt cheap compared to like any other state, really. Like I think PA PA's pretty cheap for non-residents as well, which is crazy to me because of, you know, PA is starting to move up there in the ranks, I think, with the quality of deer.
For sure.
But I don't think Jersey's quite up to that standard yet. I don't think, I never hunted there. Not. Yeah. But New Jersey does have a draw to it because like you said, it starts in September when
you can shoot a buck in velvet in New Jersey.
Yeah. We have a friend who did that and he shot it. Like it wasn't a big buck, wasn't anything like that, but it was a buck in velvet. And that's, I mean, everyone wants a buck in velvet.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go down there and shoot a one-sided three-point in velvet.
Yeah, the only thing you have to do as far as that goes is you have to shoot a doe first in that month of September.
Yep.
And with that, you know, apparently I find it hard, but at the same time, it was if you're doing it properly, you have good access, stuff like that, you're going to be able to get a doe pretty quick probably in the month of September. I really only sat 3 times in September, so I'm not going to sit here and say it was impossible. I was on a deer the third time I sat. But, you get a doe first, you're absolutely able to shoot a buck in velvet still.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest draw down there in that state.
You know, interestingly, I would say this too. The amount of public land in a state that is that small, it's really a huge percentage per what you would think it would be. It's big.
Yeah.
Because
when you said
Jersey hunts big in a way. Yeah. I'm not telling you there's not pressure. I'm just saying it hunts bigger than it is.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, like when you said there was the public that you hunt is like 7,000, 8,000 acres of public. It's like, that's bigger than what I thought.
Yeah. So the public I hunt 6,700 acres, something like that.
Yeah.
20 minutes down the road is another 6,000 to 7,000 acres. 20 minutes down the road from that is another 6,000 to 7,000 acres.
Wow.
Then you get up in the mountains. There's a lot of land there.
Mm-hmm.
And understand that they lease a lot of that land to agricultural. So like you want to hunt over a bean field, it exists there. You can hunt over a bean field in Jersey in September. That's a thing. Now I cannot guarantee you're gonna be the only person there.
Yeah.
But you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an interesting state in that way of like, you wouldn't think of it. You would think it would be way easier to access a lot of public land in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a knock on Pennsylvania public land. Just for me,
right,
where I live in my location, it's much easier to get to that 6,700 acres in Jersey than it is to get to the 2,000 acres in Pennsylvania that's close, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even here where we are in Mannheim, the one closest to me, I think it has 6,700, close to 8,000 now with a new piece they just added on. So I think it's like 8,000 acres of public right close to me, but yet that's the biggest chunk. Everything else is like
1,200.
Yeah, 1,200, 1,000, 800, like.
And don't like sneeze at that, because I hunt places in New York that are 600-700 and produce deer consistently.
Yeah.
I do well there.
Yeah, I mean, like the place I'm going to go tomorrow when I go out, it's a part of that 5,000 acres, but it's on the other side of the road. It's a 20-acre piece of public, and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm going to go over there. So, I mean,
that's probably the spot everybody ignores.
Yeah, exactly. Because I went over there and there was no signs of human at all over there. Yep. I mean, has everything.
Yep, I have a spot a lot like that. The spot where everybody double parks each other in is across the street. And the spot that I go hunt is 20 acres on the other side.
Yep. You know,
I go hunt that side.
Yeah, exactly. And there's actually, there's a swamp down that's like adjacent to this piece that I wanted to check out, but I just never got over there. Like it, because it has like a little knob that a point, and then that down below it is a swamp. And I guarantee you, if someone listens to this that lives near me, knows exactly what I'm talking about.
They'll be sitting there tomorrow too.
Guaranteed.
They'll be there tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Well, luckily this won't go out.
I mean, I don't think this is live, right?
No. Yeah.
You'll get one good hunting.
That's why we can't do these live, because you never know when something's going to slip, and then it's like, oh man, there goes my spot for tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm over here blowing up Jersey, and I'm like, yeah, should I actually say this?
the whole episode I'm just going to bleep out.
I haven't said a word about where it is. Other people have talked about Jersey in this way. Delaware is very similar. Delaware has a lot of public land for what it is, and is pretty lightly pressured. Delaware gets a lot of pressure for duck hunting.
Yeah.
I've done some intensive research in there. And you know, to speak to that, the sort of, to bring it back to what I guess I'm here to talk about is like that short traveling for hunting.
Right. Yep.
Like, hey, can I be there in 4 hours? Or hey, can I be there in 5 hours? Or hey, can I be there in can I leave in the morning?
Yeah.
I would say this is basically how I live my hunting season. Can I leave in the morning and make it there by an evening sit? Like a reasonable evening sit.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, Delaware is something I've done a good bit of studying on, but not hunted. And I think that is something that is key to any sort of success I have is either a little prior knowledge, like in New York.
Yep.
Or like the good graces of somebody else. Like, hey, take a look at this or take a look at that. And that's normally what it is. It's not like, I'm going to tell you where those deer are. It's like, take a look at this spot and see what you think.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
As in, like, take a look at this public land and see what you think.
That's what I did for Ethan. I mean, I was like, hey, check this spot out. You know, if you don't find anything, then that's it. But I'm not going to tell you where to look at this spot.
Right.
Yeah. Just like, hey, go check this spot out.
Yep.
Because Ethan, if you're hunting off the ground or you have an 18-pound tree stand or whatever, your situation is not the same as Cody's situation. It's not the same as my situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, none of those situations are the same. So I don't think it behooves us as hunters to say, go sit in this spot necessarily.
Yep.
Because you might not be as patient, as quiet, as adept at what I have crazy good hearing.
Yeah.
I don't have crazy good eyesight. So guess what? A spot that works for my cousin who has crazy good eyesight might not work for me.
Yeah.
I can't see shit. So so I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's the way to go. But I think if you say, hey, here's an area, find a spot that works for you in this area, that's how I've made a lot of progress in the sort of hunting I do.
Right. Yeah.
Here's an area. Now you find your spot.
Yeah.
In what suits you the best. So
yeah. So now we know the real reason why you archery hunt. You can't see.
I can't see shit.
So you have to get them close.
Well, yeah, I gun hunt one weekend a year. That's my limit of gun hunting.
Like, I hope that's a deer. Bang.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like, it looks like antlers. It's brown, right?
It's down.
God, that looks like Carhartt. No, I.
Well, why was that guy on all fours in the woods? Like,
Jesus, he didn't have to crawl into that blowdown.
Yeah.
I grew up gun hunting. That's how I grew up. But I gun hunt in the Adirondacks. That's when I gun hunt. Yeah. Now.
Mm-hmm. And, okay.
And I enjoy that quite a bit. What's funny is I work hand in hand with a gun company, so I do a good bit of like duck hunting and turkey hunting stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I work hand in hand with a gun company. Tends to be I bow hunt though. Yeah.
Most. Yeah. Yeah. Usually so, how that ends up being.
Yeah.
No.
No, but what you said earlier about like the can I get there for an evening sit? You know, I never like I've thought about going to other states like West Virginia, for example, for Maryland, for Jersey, even like even New York from my cabin. Like it's like if I leave from this area, can I get to there for an evening sit? And then the next day I can hunt all day in that area.
Yep.
You know, like yep. a weekend thing, like leave Friday morning, be able to sit from the evening on and then Saturday wake up and sit all day in that area and then Sunday head home
yep.
if they don't have Sunday hunting.
So that is a lot of my concentration of like, I'll give you an example. I hunt mm-hmm. this place in New York and I'm going to make a plug. He's going to listen to this anyway. My cousin plays for the Mariners, right?
And okay.
He very rarely gets a early season sit in unless he's injured. And a couple of years ago he was injured. And we went to this place in New York, and it takes me roughly 5.5 hours to get there. So okay. I'm like, I'll meet you at 2:45 there.
Yeah.
I drive up, and I meet him there. And I look at him, and this is early, like October 1st early. And I go, hey, man, I'm going to go sit the spot. It's like 35 yards off the road. Just looking at – literally looking at my mapping app, going, the wind's going this way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to search down a tree somewhere in this vicinity and I'm going to sit there. And he goes, I'm going to go to this spot. It's like a quarter mile back. I'm like, yeah, perfect. Yeah. Awesome. And I tell him I'm not shooting a doe. I'm not shooting a doe today. Blah, 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 blah. Well, I get in that tree and I'm there no more than 15 minutes and this doe walks 7 yards under me. So I smoke her. And, and I literally sent him a picture. I was like, couldn't help myself. Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, 15 minutes in, like, how can you pass it up? That's like,
I'm 50 yards from the road.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I can drag her, like, I can sneeze hard and get her to the road, right? Like, if she's behind me, yeah. I get one good one in. She's out of the road. Like, we're good.
You could leave your setup there, take her back, and then go back and sit again.
So I sat the rest of the evening.
Yeah.
And I ended up seeing 5 deer after her. So I saw 2 more does and 3 bucks.
Mm,
and okay. just nothing I wanted to shoot at the time as far as bucks went. And does, that was the only doe tag I had for that area, so I couldn't shoot another doe.
Right.
But with that, yeah, I left that sort of mid-morning and said, I'll meet you up here at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I then quartered that deer out, called it in, and drove home that night. I stopped on my way home, you know, because by the time I was on my way home, you're talking early season. We're not getting out of the woods till 7:30-ish.
Mm-hmm.
His battery was dead, so I had to drive him back to his truck and wait for his dad to come type of deal. So I got on the road at like 9 o'clock. Yeah, I stopped 3 hours from where I was hunting
mm-hmm.
and posted up for a little bit and took a nap and then drove home the next morning when I got up or whatever.
Yeah.
But that is a very common thing for me because I felt, first of all, I love my family and I want to spend time with them.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to Tom all the time and I get to hunt with him very rarely.
Yeah.
So to me, it's worth that trip.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, I felt very confident in that sit. And it's all about confidence
mm-hmm.
to me. Those I'm willing to drive 4 or 5 hours, or I want to drive 20 minutes, or I want to drive 12 hours, whatever it is. It's all about that confidence. When I go to Ohio, I'm not looking for a buck I can necessarily shoot in New York or New Jersey or Pennsylvania on the first 2 days of, you know, the sit. Now you get mm-hmm. me on day 6 and I've been there a while, my standards start to go down. I'm fine with that.
Right.
But with that being said, yeah, man, I've seen the biggest deer I've ever seen in the woods a couple times there. I've seen some good bucks that got me shaken there a couple times. And with that, you know, I look at that and go, okay, that's worth this drive to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to be honest, there's other times where I look at it and I'm like, hey, man, I'm willing to pay that extra money because you can shoot one deer there on your initial license you buy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Doe or buck.
Okay.
It's $180, I think, for the license.
And that we're talking Ohio?
That doe might, what's that?
We're talking Ohio or New York right now?
Ohio.
Okay. All right.
So that doe you might shoot, that doe might cost you $180, but there's definitely times I've stared one down thinking about it for that first one going, yeah, I could buy that second. I can buy that buck tag
mm-hmm.
tomorrow morning when I wake up and continue to hunt this week.
Yeah.
It's all about the opportunity and the confidence.
Yeah.
And the position I feel like I'm in at that time. And there's times where I feel more confident going on a 5-hour drive to get in the conditions I want to be in.
Right.
Than I feel staying where I'm at, having a 20-minute drive or an hour drive and being in conditions that don't feel conducive to this, to the place that I'm at in my hunting for that mm-hmm. time, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
So I'm not going to judge it just off wind, but like the fact that I drove into a hurricane to hunt didn't make a whole lot of sense. You know what I mean? Like yeah. the shitty weather we're having right now in Pennsylvania, probably should have stayed in New York,
man. The opening
week. But I also
week,
have to judge how I feel, right? Like,
yeah.
am
yeah.
I tired? Am I worn Absolutely. Out? Do I have my son tomorrow? Do I have to work tomorrow? All of those things go into play.
Yeah. I mean, the opening day for PA freaking sucked. Like, it was like, I probably shouldn't have been out there, honestly. But it was like, it was opening day. Like, I can't not be out there. Mm-hmm. I can't. And then, like, I was talking to my wife because you said about, you know, driving 3 hours and driving home that like, and you stopped 9 hours and then you stopped at nine, then you drove the rest of the way home. And I talked to her. I was like, my cabin's 3 hours away. I don't care if I have to wake up earlier in the morning to get up there. If I hunt during the day, if I hunt all day and then come home at night, at least I'll be able to see you and the baby Saturday and Sunday,
yep.
you know, like yep. it's like, if you're dedicated to this amazing opportunity that we have and what we can do as hunters, then you'll do whatever you have to do to get out in the woods. Like, I think that's, right. you have to, because if you're not really into it, you won't put the effort forward to do any of this that we're talking about right now.
Right. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm never going to be like a Dan Infault where,
mm-hmm.
where, and he will say now that he wishes he had spent more time with his family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My son and my family are my priority.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, I also spend the entire year making sure that I make them the priority.
Mm-hmm.
So that this time of year, I can cut myself. I don't even want to ask anyone else for slack. I need to be able to cut myself the slack to go do what I want to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I look at this and go, okay, my confidence right now says I need 40 degree temps
mm-hmm.
and a west wind. And I have these spots to pick from in New York State
right.
with that setup. But right now it's 60 or 70 where I'm sitting right now.
Right.
Can I work it out in my life to make that drive?
Yeah.
And nine mm-hmm. times out of 10 during deer season, because I've done all of the prerequisite work to make sure that I've been the man I need to be the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I can make that drive. I can figure that out between work and family and the whole thing
yep.
to make that drive, to be in the conditions I want to be. I don't understand, to me, and this is really what this is about. I don't understand, as people who are passionate and involved in this lifestyle, we only get 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
At yep. best, we get 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
Is that 4-hour drive not worth it?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can put yourself in a lot of times you can put yourself in very optimum conditions in 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I was truly bought into this, I would have a PA license and give you guys a call and be like, hey, you're a couple hours from me. What's the weather look like?
Yeah.
What are the bucks doing? Have I put out trail cameras? And understand mm-hmm. that I'm running trail cameras in New Jersey. I'm running trail cameras in New York. I'm running trail cameras still in Pennsylvania because I can go buy a license at Walmart in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm still running trail cameras everywhere. I don't get out to Jersey because it's just like, I'm spending a week there. Mm-hmm. I will scout for 2 days before I engage in hunting. But yeah, for everything else, I can drive within a few hours. Right. I have trail cameras running and I'm constantly on top of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all in the prep work. It's all in the commitment to being ready to hunt, and mm-hmm. it's in the commitment to being in a position to hunt.
Yeah.
From there. And I'm not crazy successful. Like I said, I'm not the world's best big buck killer. I've had some good encounters. I hit one 2 years ago that would have been just an amazing buck to hang on my wall that mm-hmm. I never recovered. But that was in New York on a sit that it was a 76 degree day when I got in the stand at 4:30 on like November 7th. So it was really hot.
Yeah.
And had no business being where I was at, but had made the trip up there for a couple of days to hunt with my family. And also assuming that I'm going to do better in the rut there than I am anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Given my knowledge of the area, if that makes sense. So again, the confidence.
Yeah, because I imagine New Jersey during the rut, especially with people baiting, like it kind of like you can see the rut happening. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's like, man, I mean, if you have a good doe family around you, around your corn pile, you're going to have the good buck around the corn pile as well, because the doe are going to be there. So I mean, it's a lot different than New York, probably.
Yeah, so given my druthers, I'm going to hunt New York in that way. Just from those two things, I'm mm-hmm. going to hunt New York because it's a more natural movement, right?
Yep.
Like, I understand that a lot better. But also, 2 weeks from now, that October 15th-ish weekend,
mm-hmm.
I'll be in the woods in New Jersey, because I also know that's when you really start to see some good scraping activity.
Yeah.
And whether there's corn piles or not, maybe those scrapes get concentrated around the areas the corn piles are in, but let's face it, that's going to be the prime motivating factor to whitetail movement in that time is breeding takes precedence over everything. There's a reason bucks die during the rut.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big bucks die during the rut.
Yep.
Oh yeah. BBDR.
Whether it's a corn pile or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I had to think about that. No, not going to lie, though. Like, just that conversation we just had completely just changed my mindset on going to places and hunting. Because, mm-hmm. like, my cabin's three and a half hours away from the house. And for, you know, forever, I was thinking, like, oh, if I want to go up to the cabin, I need a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I need to go up during the weekend. Because, like, me and my dad, we went up for opening day. We left. I got off work at 7:30 in the morning. Me and dad drove up. My dad met me there at my work. We drove up. We were up at the cabin by 10:30, 11 at the latest. And that's with, you know, one stop to get gas and everything. I had all afternoon. I mean, granted, we couldn't hunt Friday because it was the day before. But, like, I had all afternoon. I was like, I can leave after work. Be there before lunch. I can have an entire afternoon to hunt. And I could still, if I wanted, I could still just come home.
Yep. Yeah.
And be no problem. Like, you just straight up changed my mindset on that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I could, like, go up for a day if I wanted to.
If the weather is, like, perfect the day you get off work and you head up there, and it's like, oh, man, I feel really good about this sit just in the evening, and Saturday looks like complete shit, just, I mean, honestly, just do it. Like, that's my mindset now. Like, I don't know why, like, it just took you, Justin, to change my mindset. Like, just like that, just talking about that, like, and I think it'll change other people's mindsets too that listen to this. Like, it's like, if you want to go do it, just do it, you know, like if you have the time, do it.
Yeah. And one of my really, I would say one of my best friends, he's a fishing guide in New mm-hmm. York, upstate New York, and he is a border patrol agent, and he lived in Michigan for a long time. And he used to call them his kamikaze trips, where he would, like, drive from Michigan home to go salmon fishing, right?
Yeah.
And then drive back to Michigan and work. And it's like, dude, that's a son of a bitch of a trip. It really is. But that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He'd want to catch salmon with his family in the rivers around where we grew up, mm-hmm. or with me. Like, he'd be like, hey, man, you want to meet me in, you know, Pulaski? That's not far from where we're from. Mm-hmm. You want to meet me in Pulaski? It's 4:30 at Fat Nancy's. Be there. Okay. So, you know, we both take off to do that. And that's really where I don't have that for fishing. I love fishing, but I don't have that for fishing, right?
Yeah.
But what I learned was, like, if you prioritize this, we have 3 months at best to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And a big chunk of it is for me, like, realizing you're at where you're at. You yeah. just have to be okay with it. Like, yep. does this trip take me 2 hours? Does it take me 3 hours? Does it take me 4 hours? I'm just going to be in my car. What can I do to be okay to be in the car for 4 hours to do the thing that I love to do?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or vice versa, to get back to see the family that I love.
Right.
Yep. You know, cause you have to take that into account too. And there's definitely days that I'm on long road trips where I'm like, I cannot wait to get back and see my son. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take away from what I'm doing at the time, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, man, I'm going to plan how to be the best dad I can be when I'm around him, when I get back. And maybe that's leave a little bit early to pop a nap in the middle. Maybe that's leave a little bit earlier than I want to, but at the same time, a lot of people limit themselves because they're not okay just being okay with what they're doing. If that makes sense. Yep. Like, I'm in the car now, I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
I have all my shit together. I'm good to go. I'm on point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just need to be okay with driving for a few hours.
Right.
Like, yep. I need to be okay that this is what I'm doing because this is what I love to do.
Yeah.
And I also understand, for instance, my cousin, like I said, he plays pro baseball. He's mm-hmm. in a bunch of different cities every year. He's all over the place. He doesn't want to travel anywhere.
Yeah.
He wants to be around home.
Yep.
And I'm good with that. I get that. So every person has their own thing. There's a little bit of type 2 fun suck that I like saying that I engage in. Like, yeah, man, I drove 5 hours to go sit 3 hours.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of ego to that. And I'm not going to lie about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, I enjoy the lifestyle of being a vagabond deer hunter, so mm-hmm. to speak. And I enjoy giving it my all, knowing that I am like my cousin. I wrote an article about what makes a good hunting partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to all my hunting and fishing buddies, like, what makes me good, what makes me bad? And his point was, the good part is essentially, if I tell you there's a deer someplace, you will do anything you can possibly do to get to it.
Yeah.
But with that being said, also the bad part is we feed off each other. So in a good way and a bad way, right? Like, mm-hmm. our bad way was like, yeah, there's some mornings that with all of that running, all that going, you get lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I am able to withstand the 3 hour drive or the 4 hour drive because I know in that 3 or 4 hour sit, it could be the culmination of everything I've done for the whole year.
Yep.
To be in that position, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, because like the more like if you sit in one spot the whole hunting season, your opportunities will go up in that spot. But like the more times you sit in different spots, your opportunities go way up because you're in different areas. Yep. You're not blowing things out. Like it's like, yep. and you're seeing different areas all the time. So it's
you never get bored.
Yeah,
you never
get exactly.
bored. It's mm-hmm. not like I've been looking at the same frigging thing for 18 straight sits. It's like, oh, I'm in a completely different state.
Yeah.
you know, I have no idea what sits around the corner. Like,
exactly.
This could be the day that Bullwinkle walks around the corner and here he is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because last year I sat in one stand all of archery, and then I got so bored. I saw 2 buck the whole time. And this year, if I sat in my hang on every single day, I'd get so bored because you're looking at the same stuff all the time. Like, I'm the kind of person that doesn't like to stay behind a certain car for a certain amount of miles. Like, I get so freaking annoyed with the ass end of that car that I just want to ram him off the road for some reason. I don't know why, so I just try and pass him. You know, it's... That's how I am with hunting too. Like, I need to see different things. And that's why, like, going back to the very beginning of the podcast where we started talking about mobile, that's why I think I went to a more mobile setup, because I was tired of sitting in the same spot all the time, you know, because that's how I grew up. I would just sit and watch the same spot all the time. Like, whatever deer came in front of me, I would shoot. Like, I'm still that way because I don't have enough deer or buck under my belt to just shoot, just hold out to us for a certain buck. Like, I'm not to that level yet, and I will eventually when I turn probably 55. But, you know,
well, or you don't have to be.
Yeah,
it's fine wherever you're at.
Exactly.
Where you're at is where you're at. That's exactly it with the drive, with the time. Where you're at is where you're at.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with where you're at.
No, no.
And, you know, I'll say this to kind of bring it back. Like, I'm a fairly organized, fairly anal retentive person about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads me to the ability to, like, go do these. Can I jump in a car and drive 4 hours to go hunt? Mm-hmm. Yep, I can. You know why? Because I have all of my stuff together in this spot, in this bag, and I know where everything is and know how to do that. So I think a big sort of deal for all of this is, yeah, man, I'm not the guy. I might be the guy that bangs around my EDP the first day I'm putting it up during the season because, like, I haven't put it up in a year or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm not the guy who didn't know where my EDP was.
Right. Yes.
I'm not the guy who doesn't know where my stuff is. I'm not the guy who hasn't shot his bow. I'm not the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to have all that shit in line to kind of do this style of hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you don't want to drive 5 hours to realize you forgot a release.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to drive 5 hours to go. And if you did, you have to figure it out right quick. Right.
Yep.
So as far as planning goes, I put an emphasis on planning for the whole year,
mm-hmm.
the entire year. I literally sit at my computer every day and I work from home and I sit at my computer and I look and I go, what is one thing I can do today to make my deer season better?
Mm-hmm.
Every single day. Because I care that much about it.
Yeah.
But it could be something small. Did I put that bill on auto pay today?
Mm-hmm.
Because now I don't have to worry about it during deer season.
Mm-hmm.
Did I remember that my gloves sucked last year?
Yeah.
Because now I ordered a new pair. Did I remember that, like, did I reach out to this person on their birthday? Because last year I missed it, and I can be a better friend than that. And that will, now I'm not eating up. We've all been on stand all day and thought about some shit like that.
I forgot my mom's birthday.
Yeah. Like, oh damn, I forgot my mom's birthday. Right. Like,
oh geez.
We've all done that. Yeah.
I'd be disowned if I forgot my mom's birthday.
Well, it'd make hunting easier though. So that's better. Right?
Yeah.
That's true. Well, I wouldn't do it.
But, like, you know, I try and do one thing every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot do this 4 hour, 3 hour, whatever drive lifestyle.
Yeah.
If you're not dedicated for the rest of the year to that style.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because you'll fuck it up.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I mess enough stuff up. I mess up shots. I mess up calls. I've had more deer blow me out because I called and they stepped 2 feet downwind of me. You know what I mean? Like, I had the wind. I called to them because I was getting impatient. They step into my wind and they get me. Like, I've had that happen enough. I mess enough stuff up. So the rest of the time, I need to be on point about everything else I'm doing to get to that point that 5 hour drive to watch the steam pour out of his nose and watch the main beams come through the brush and see him at 120 yards. Like, it doesn't have to be a shot to make that worth it for that 5 hour drive.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I completely agree with that because like the opening day morning, I saw jack shit. I saw some squirrels run around underneath my stand. And then it started downpouring again. And I got up and I was like, you know what? I'm moving, making a game plan here. I'm changing spots. I'm going over to my hang on and I'm going to sit there and hopefully I see something, you know, and I saw that buck and right there, like I lost my rangefinders on the way in, so I couldn't tell how far he was. So I didn't take a shot at him and it just made it the whole day worth it just for that. Like, I didn't drive no 4 hours or 5 hours or anything like that, but like, those little things make anything worth it. Like, you got to find the positive in those negative days. Like, even when you drive for sure. 5 hours, like, you have to. Like, if you always think about the negative when you're out there in the woods, like, you're gonna hate hunting at the end of the day. Like, you're gonna absolutely hate it.
Yeah,
and it's definitely tough because you get into the grind of the season, and you're like, in Ohio last year, I was a piece of shit. I was miserable.
Yeah,
I was miserable in Ohio last year. And it definitely led to me being lazier than I should have been.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm acknowledging. I mean, I have no idea how many people are going to listen to this, but I'm acknowledging it in front of all those people. I was a lazy piece of shit last year, and I shouldn't have been.
Yep.
For as hard as I worked for the rest of all the time, it came down to that. But we sit here and say we love it. And we concentrate on it, and we're passionate about it. And I believe all of that. The thing we have to remember is whether you saw that buck or not, whether you changed stance or not, those three squirrels you saw is still better than filling out computer bullshit in your car were talking about earlier.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Yep. I would have shot one of the squirrels.
You should have.
I was really tempted. I was really tempted.
There was some small game heads the other day at Walmart, and I was ready to go.
I was gonna use my broadheads that I had on for deer. I was just gonna send it.
Just send it.
Yeah.
It would have cut the squirrel in half.
But a little expensive for that. I'm like,
just use a practice tip. You're fine.
I should put one in my quiver just for those situations. Because, man, those squirrels are looking real tempting at that moment in time.
Yeah. Dad had a squirrel 10 feet away from him, just yelling at him for 5-10 minutes. He's
the squirrel
like,
was yelling, or his dad. Or your dad was yelling.
My dad was about to yell at the squirrel, but the squirrel just giving him shit, and he's like, I almost shot it with the bow.
Would have taken his head off.
Oh, it would have. Like, at 10 feet, that squirrel would have been cut in half. He wouldn't have cared.
So, Ethan, you want to talk about New York? You have a question about New York now?
Yeah, because like my cab, it's probably maybe an hour and a half most drive from my cabin up to the New York state line. And I was looking because...
Roughly where?
Well, I'm in Potter County, so north central PA. Mm-hmm. So just going straight up. But like we're going to Illinois this year. So then that's the first time we've ever hunted out of state. So that kind of like sparked an interest to be like, whoa, if we're going here this year, well, where can I go next year?
Yeah, what are we doing next year?
That's, you know, closer that we could just go and do it. And that's, you know, not 12-hour drive. And then I look into New York, and I was like, all right. So I looked on, like, the New York, you know, the website a little bit, and I didn't do a lot of research yet on it, but it looked a little more confusing than what I'm used to. So I don't know, like, I don't know why. Just seemed like a whole bunch of just more – it's different. Maybe that's why – than what I'm used to.
So, first of all, I'm going to say I might have to pause in a second here. But second of all – New York is, in my opinion, less confusing than what you're used to, but in different ways.
Okay.
So New York's bow opener is going to be very similar to what you're used to. It's October 1st in the section of the state you're in. In the northern tier, it's September 27th. That's a traditional bow opener, no matter what day that falls on. October 1st, no matter what day that falls on. Where you're at... We have zones, so I'm going to say we, just referring as a New York native, we have zones. You're going to be like an 8, whatever that might be, 7 central New York, so like that Syracuse strip down to Binghamton. And then 8's more towards the Rochester, southern, what they refer to as true like southern tier New York, you know, Elmira, Corning, that area.
Okay.
And then... You know, the 4s and the 5s and the stuff like that are out east, and you go into the 9s to the west towards like Buffalo, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right.
So the way New York sort of works is you can buy your license pre October 1st, and your license, you'll have to buy a big game license or archery license. It's going to be a couple $100 to get that done. And you will get, for an archery license, you will get a buck or doe tag. It's a either sex tag. For your big game license, you'll get a buck tag. if you buy a muzzleloader on top of that, a muzzleloader is muzzleloader or archery season, and that will be a doe only tag.
Okay.
Okay. So just off the bat, you can shoot. If you bought all three of those licenses, which would be a few hundred dollars each, you know, it's not inexpensive.
Right.
You're going to get a buck or a doe tag for bow. That's only good during bow and muzzleloader. That's a primitive archery tag or a primitive tag, essentially.
Yeah.
You can buy a muzzleloader tag secondary, which will make it a primitive tag, and that's a doe only tag. And then you will get your buck only tag, and a bear tag, I believe, comes with that for out of state. I don't remember. I buy it. I don't pay attention to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right.
And then from there, as far as hunting goes, you can hunt 7 days a week. There's no, you know, it's half an hour. Now it's half an hour before daylight and half an hour after dark. You know, you get that half hour swing like we do.
Okay.
So that's the ins and outs. And then zone wise, it opens different days, but it's basically October 1st through. The only thing you'd have to quantify as far as like what day does this open would be gun season. Okay. And generally, that's the third Saturday in October.
Okay.
Or excuse me, in November.
Okay. All right.
Where you're going to be, it's the third Saturday in November. The Saturday before Thanksgiving is the way it falls. So what other questions do you have about New York? Because I just went into the general tag structure and like season structure, but you have, if you're thinking about going there, you probably have some questions that I can probably answer.
Yeah, I mean, that was really, I mean, like I said, I've been hunting Pennsylvania and only Pennsylvania my whole life, so I'm just used to that process. So I guess, like we said this earlier, it's like going to a new state, like you have that, it's almost like this wall that's up where like that hesitation where you're like, can I just go and do this? And I think I'm at that point right now.
Yeah.
And just doing that.
So as far as that goes, grab your PA license.
Mm-hmm.
Literally go to a local Walmart wherever you're at. I mean, Potter County, you're going to jump over the line. You're going to that's some of the, like, that Schuyler County, that area is some of the best hunting in New York.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just jump over that line, go to a local Walmart, walk in with your hunting license from Pennsylvania, give them your driver's license, your hunting license. They're going to put you in. They're going to say, okay, this person has a hunting license because, you know, you need a hunter safety certificate, essentially. And they're going to get you a license. And from there, you know, I'm a Spartan Forge zealot. Like, I'm a big fan of that system. And I know that, like, you guys have had people on from other, you know, mapping apps, and I've used them all. I have used them all. Find you whatever your mapping app of choice is. Find you the public land. And just understand that, like, you know, the culture of Pennsylvania hunting is very similar to the culture of New York hunting. So that Orange Army is a thing there too. That doesn't change.
Yeah.
Know what zone you're in, because there are certain areas that are shotgun only. You can't use a rifle.
Okay.
If you're going to go up after bow season, so to speak, if you're bow hunting, bow hunting's bow hunting, right?
Yep. Right.
The only thing is you cannot crossbow hunt until the last 2 weeks of bow season in New York.
Okay.
So if you're a crossbow hunter in Pennsylvania, you can start the very first day of bow season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In New York, you can't hunt until the last 2 weeks of bow season up there with a crossbow.
Wow. So that would change for you.
That would be me. I'm a crossbow hunter.
Yeah.
So that would, I guess that would change.
So in that case, you're going to want to, which honestly, if you shoot your buck in Pennsylvania early, first 2 weeks of October, you get up there. To my observation, I'm not saying this is 100% true. I'm not saying this is written in stone. For that sort of like latitude line in New York, somewhere to that third week in November, like that last week of bow season, is generally a time when you're going to see some good chasing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems a little later than some of the other places. That's, you know, it's one of those things like that's tends to be a time that you can count on seeing some good chasing still.
Which goes in line with up at our cabins, because our cabins, my cabin, the last day of archery, the mountain behind us is like rut central, buck chasing doe everywhere. And I mean, even up at Ethan's cabin, like the first day of rifle, they're still chasing up there. So like it follows in line with that up Yep. When you get up north more in PA, which would, I mean, it doesn't change just because there's you cross the border in New York. You know, like, yeah, it's like, it goes, yeah, exactly. So, like, that makes sense. So, like, even if you go up there the last 2 weeks of archery with your crossbow, I mean, you're going to see action. So, if you just get in that, yeah, you're going to, it's all about that action, boss. Yeah.
Got to get in the action.
You get in that nice transition zone. You get, you get between some bedding, you get in a nice funnel. You're going to get a shot.
Yeah.
And what's nice is, hey, man, you're up there for a couple of days. There's no APR.
Yeah,
you want to shoot a spike, you shoot a spike. Like, you want to shoot a doe, you shoot a doe. There's nothing that's stopping you from shooting a deer that you see that you feel is like, hey, man, that's I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I can tie my dad.
Yep.
My dad has shot everything. I mean, he shot, you know, doe, but he shot everything from a spike up to a 6-point here in Pennsylvania, right? Before they had antler restrictions and everything, too. Yeah. So, yeah. I was like, one of my goals. And I was like, oh, I can't tie him on a spike or anything. But one of my goals was like to have every single size buck that my dad has as well. And as of right now, it's only a 6-point right now. So I was like, well, I could do a 5. Technically, I could do a 4 and a 3 if it's just on one side.
Yep.
But now I'm like, well, I can go to New York and get a spike and I can tie him on that one right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you, here's a little secret that I use for my traveling hunting. I basically will ask or nicely suggest that I get like some Cabela's Bass Pro Shops gift certificates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can generally buy a license from them with a gift certificate.
Okay.
And have it sent to your house. So.
Yeah, that's, I didn't even think about that, honestly. I didn't think you could buy a license with the gift card.
Only at those places. That's the only place I know about that you can. So I used to work for Bass Pro Shops. That's kind of how I got the idea. But I'm like, oh, I'll be a son of a bitch. Because here you go. Yeah. There's a lot of credit cards that have point systems. And Bass Pro is in a lot of those credit card sort of like, hey, you can get gift cards. I have a credit card that gives gift cards for points. And Bass Pro is one of those places. So. Yep. Just kind of save that up and use that for your tags. You know, it's kind of like using the Alaska Airlines credit card when you're going to go hunt Alaska and all of a sudden you get a free flight up there. You know, it's the same principle on a much smaller scale.
Oh, man.
But, so you should be able to use your gift cards to buy a license. And then New York doesn't seem – it's not crazy insurmountable. It's a few hundred bucks. But at the same time, hey, man, I don't have somebody else's checkbook or bills, right? Yeah. So I don't know what that looks like to them.
Yeah.
But that's a little tip, you know, you get some credit card points that does go towards like a Bass Pro or something like that, or Cabela's, specifically that company, that entity, you can use those points and those gift cards to buy a license.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really good tip. Cause I'm going to use that now. Like, I'm going to be like, hey, I just want some gift cards for Bass Pro. And then like, cause there's Bass Pros in other states. So like, just order from that.
Call and order your license.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if you absolutely have to, generally there's one close enough to like go to one time, right?
Yeah.
So like, but the way that even came about was I was going to hunt Nebraska and I called and asked them in the first place. I was like, I'm pretty sure I can use a gift card for this. They're like, yeah, you definitely can at this place. And I'm like, okay, perfect.
Man.
So yeah, it's and again, it's all planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, little stuff like that. Like, how do I do the one thing every day that makes this trip or makes my hunting season better or possible?
I agree with that. Cause like, even like e-scouting, you know, like want, like sometimes look at new areas, especially like out in Illinois, when we go out there, like I have been looking at some public land, but then the outfitter actually gave me some waypoints. So it's like, I've been looking at that. So like, I've been looking at West Virginia, Maryland, Jersey, Delaware, New York, like all that kind of stuff, just because like looking at different things, because PA, like I kind of have my areas figured out. So like when I do go eventually out of state on public, I want to have those areas kind of already planned of where I'm going to be going. So I have a rough idea.
And what you'll find is once you make one of these trips, the trips seem less insurmountable because it does seem insurmountable. And I understand that.
Yep.
But like earlier this year, I wanted to shoot some sweet pictures for Retay, the shotgun company I work with. They're based in Maryland. Maryland opens before Pennsylvania or New York as far as turkey goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what weekend can I sneak to Maryland? It didn't seem like, oh, I got to drive 3 hours, figure out how to get like, just like, what weekend can I get there? And I'll figure out all the rest afterwards. You right. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it just really becomes, it becomes like a sort of like second nature. Yeah, man, it's like buying tickets to a movie.
Yeah.
Like you just, oh, if I download Fandango, I get to get a discount on this ticket. Like yeah. you just figure that stuff out pretty quick, yep. you know? But really I'll bring it back to having a system for what you do. So like, I don't think this is easy if you don't have all your shit together before you get there. Mm-hmm. So like, if all your shit's together, you're on point. You have this is the way I climb a tree. This is my saddle. This is all the setup I have. This is my bow. This is my crossbow. This is my gun. I know they're accurate, sighted in. Everything's on point there. This is my clothing system. This is what I have to do these things. This is the maps I'm used to. This is, I've downloaded offline maps in case I get there and they're, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in the middle of nowhere and I don't have contact
yep.
With that app. All of those things have to be lined up and you have to be thinking about those things in January of the year before.
Yeah.
To then feel comfortable to go do this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, you have 9 months. If 3 months of hunting, you have 9 months. If you do even, I'm getting crazy here, but if you do one thing a day to make sure that those 3 months are set exactly. up, like, I mean, it's unrealistic to do one thing a day, but like, You can do one small thing every single day and you're 10 times more prepared than the next guy.
So that's as I've said, that's my goal. And mm-hmm. understand when I worked at Bass Pro Shops, I would work the closing shift, which is the shitty shift nobody wants to work.
Yeah.
As a team lead manager, I would close every single night of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why? Because during hunting season, everybody wants to close so they can yeah. hunt in the mornings.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I did that the rest of the year, so there was no question when it came to hunting season.
Yeah.
That was my shift, and yeah. nobody could take it from me because I did it the rest of the year and nobody else wants to do it. 4th of July, I'm closing. Thanksgiving, I'm closing.
Yeah.
You know, like Easter, I'm closing. That's yep. that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
It has always been the mindset of to do that just that one thing.
Yep.
To be the guy who volunteers for extra shifts at work or to cover somebody else or to do that, to make sure that as far as, like I said, the family life goes, like going to the adventure museum, we're going to the zoo, we're doing the things we need to do
mm-hmm.
because I enjoy those things. But at the same time, it's like, this gives me a clear conscience to know I'm not taking anything from anybody else to go do the thing I want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, The family thing, it has to be a priority too. Just
it's
like
the number one.
When hunting comes around, it's like, you know, that's not priority. Hunting isn't priority number one. It's just what you want to do. So you make time for it, but you still prioritize your family over hunting. So like, yep. that's the big thing. It's like you plan all year for that. You embrace the 9 months because of like working the late shift, you brace that suck so you can brace the suck during the three yep. months of hunting. Yeah.
So even to the point of this year, I will be in New York hunting Halloween weekend, which is obviously last weekend of October, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, no matter what happens, I'm not going to miss my 3-year-old son trick-or-treating. It's not yep. going to happen. I'm not right. missing it.
Right.
I don't mm-hmm. care what frigging time I have to leave in the morning. I don't care what I have to do to get there. I'm not missing it.
Yeah.
Because he's my priority. But at the same time, I'm going to hunt till the last possible second.
yep. yep.
I'm going to get there and make sure. Like, I've already started trying to figure out what his costume's going to be. It's October 4th. I've tried to figure out what his costume's going to be because he switches every day because he's mm-hmm. three.
Yeah. Yep.
yep.
What he's going to be. Do I have it in time? Is he set up to go? What is our trunk or treat situation? Like, what is all this? I've yeah. already tried to figure that out
yeah.
now. yeah. I haven't set up a dentist appointment for myself in 2 years, but god damn it, I know what he's doing on yeah. Halloween. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Like, yeah.
Yep.
Like, yep. 100%.
So it's like, first of all, because I care about him, but second of all, and I don't want to miss that, but second of all, like, yeah, I'm going to be precise and to the point, to the the actual like point of what I have to do to do both things well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, to speak to the fact that I'm on here speaking about hunting different states and making those trips and understand that 5 hours isn't too far, or three hours isn't too far. And what does that look like? What does your season look like in that way? Just knowing that time management, it is a big chunk of that.
Yeah.
And again, being precise about your, not just gear, but like just the way you organize things. Mm-hmm. I don't drive a truck. I drive a RAV4.
Yeah.
And I have a kayak on top of it and a hitch a haul rack on the back of it with a cooler. And I know I have a phone number to a guy who can process deer in New Jersey if I need that to happen because I don't have time to do it. But I also would not hesitate to quarter deer out, put it in that cooler and drive it home and process it on my table if I want to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like multiple plants, multiple layers of security in those ways.
Yeah.
You just, it sounds, I don't want to make it sound insurmountable. It's actually pretty easy once you break it down. Like once you take that attitude of what's the one thing I can do today, it makes it fairly simple. And then you go, oh, freaking 5 hours, no big deal. I can drive 5 hours. I would drive 5 hours, you know, to do a shitty job you don't want to do.
Yeah.
You've driven 5 hours on a work trip you didn't want to go on. Mm-hmm. You've driven 5 hours to go to a football game you want to see. You've driven 5 hours to go, you know, meet some girl you want at the time. You know, like you've driven 5 hours
to
do stupid shit plenty of times.
Yep.
I'm talking about driving 5 hours to go do the thing you worry about the whole year.
Yeah.
The thing you want to do.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So like between New York, New Jersey, and Ohio, which one is your favorite one to hunt?
Oh, it's New York by far.
Okay.
Because of my family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you give me the place to go see the biggest deer, it's Ohio. It's not even a question. It's not even like, dude, the average buck I see in Ohio is a big buck in any of the other states I hunt.
Yeah. Wow.
And the biggest buck I've ever seen on hook. Now, I will say you get into any sort of, you do your real research, you really break it down. The biggest buck you see any place could be the biggest buck you see, period. So, I mean, the biggest buck I see in New Jersey might be the biggest buck I ever see. Or the biggest buck I see in Pennsylvania might be the biggest buck. But I'm saying consistently.
Yep.
The biggest deer I've seen in Ohio, the average buck I've seen in Ohio is bigger than the big deer I see every place else.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, Ohio has some hammers out there.
They grow them different out there. Yeah. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They do.
They put something in the corn.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a hammer buck I have on camera in New Jersey and it would be a hammer in Ohio. It would be a hammer in Pennsylvania.
It'd
be a big buck in New York. It's a big buck everywhere.
Yeah.
But I really think that the chances that I see that buck on hoof are pretty slim.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think on Ohio, it's just like, yeah, man, it's around the corner.
Yeah.
It could be around the corner anytime.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah. What is your tip to a new hunter, a listener, a veteran hunter, like your biggest tip to them, advice, whatever you want to call it to them to get out there and hunt?
Don't forget all of the shitty stuff you don't want to do during the year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that displace the thing that you actually want to do. Does it suck to wake up at 3:30 in the morning sometimes?
Oh yeah.
It sure does. Yeah. But do you wake up for it at a time you don't want to wake up to go to work? You sure do. So like, just remember where you're at.
Yeah.
Like that's really what it is. Always remember where you're at. If you're in a stand, you see three squirrels, still better than writing an insurance estimate if you're an insurance salesman, or it's still better than me bidding a motorcycle to buy because that's what I do for a living. You know, like those three squirrels are still better.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember where you're at.
Yep. Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that. Yeah.
And you know, remember where you're at as far as being a hunter. If a 90-pound doe makes you happy, I don't give a shit. Like, nobody's going to remember that. Nobody's going to care. All I care about is that you're happy.
Yeah.
Like, sincerely happy. Like, you want to shoot the biggest buck you've ever seen in your life every year? Well, yeah, there's going to be some years you eat a tag, and if that makes you happy, that makes you happy too.
Yep.
You know? So just always remember where you're at.
Yeah.
And if you're not okay with where you're at, that's on you. You make those decisions how to adjust that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
But if you're okay with where you're at, just remember where you're at and be okay with it.
Honestly, I think more people have to listen to that because, I mean, there's a lot of people that are pushing for that big buck. You know, like, you always have to get the big buck to be on a podcast, or, you know, you got to make something of yourself to be a good hunter. Like, I could be a great hunter because I consider myself a great hunter. And I think that's what everyone has to come back to, is like, remember where you're at and make sure you're having a good time doing it.
So can I bring this back to one thing? Because I would be remiss if I didn't tell this.
Yeah.
I worked at Dick's Sporting Goods when I was young. It was when they still sold guns and everything. It was great. Mm-hmm. There's old man Joe. And old man Joe came from, like, downstate New York, and I lived in upstate New York. Downstate being, like, near the city, right? Like, Mount Vernon was where he's from. And he loved hunting. He loved hunting like nobody I'd ever met loved hunting. So he invites me up to his hunting club one time. I'm like, sure, I'll go. And here I sit, and we're going through the woods, and he says, hey, over here, I see deer over here often, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go over here, and I sit down. Basically, I'm sitting under a tree, and I look over, and I see this flash, 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 flash. I'm like, what is that? I have no idea. So I pull up my binoculars. I look, and there sits Joe under this tree, and he's got, like, a big buck knife.
Yeah.
Like, not a 110, like, bigger, like a big buck knife. And he's whittling. He's out there whittling. And I mean, like, whittling like the Dickens. Like, he's making, like, a Aztec death whistle whittling. Like, friggin' whittling. And I'm just watching him. I'm like, there's no deer in the world that's going to walk by him.
Right.
So we get done for what we're doing, walk back up, and I see Joe, and I go, hey, man, I can see you whittling from a long way away. And he goes, yeah, isn't it great? And I go, what do you mean? The deer definitely see. He's like, yeah, I don't care. I've shot one deer in my life.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to be out here. Right. Everything's better when I'm out here.
Yep.
I'm just happy to be out here whittling. You got to understand what I grew up in. There was city everywhere. Like he just like had this, I'm here and this is what I'm doing. And this is what I'm happy to do.
Yep.
And he knew exactly where he was at, and he was good with it.
Yeah. That's
and that's what I'm saying. Like, just be happy with where you're at, or understand where you're at. And if you're not happy where you're at, adjust something.
Yep.
But just know where you're at. That's the thing.
Yeah. That's a great story. I mean, it reminds me of my grandpa, to be honest with you. So Justin, where can people follow along with you on your adventures, all that kind of stuff, on Instagram, Facebook, whatever you want to tag, whatever you want to let them know, follow you at?
So on Instagram, it's J.S. Hunold, H-U-N-O-L-D, J.S. Hunold. And on Facebook, it's Justin S. Hunold, spelled the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check out, like, Mobile Fanatic for Trophy Line. I write for them pretty consistently. You'll see something monthly. Kind of gauged and geared towards this sort of thing, like the culture, the let's not take this too seriously, but understand that I take it very seriously. Let's have a real conversation about it. RetayUSA.com for right now, that's changing, but RetayUSA.com, that's I curate, edit, and write for the blog there.
Okay.
And then also Spartan Forge, I am not the killer on that pro staff. They have Andy May. They have Levi Morgan. They have Bo Martok. They have
Ryan Glitzky now too.
Ryan Glitzky, Clay Campbell, like so many people. I'm not the guy, but I like writing for them. And, yeah. And Bill's a great guy. So like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like read everybody else's stuff about killing big deer, but I'll put some tips in there about some gear and bullshit like that I know about.
Yeah.
Like that's what I got.
On how to prepare for long trips.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So Spartan Forge and yeah, just I really enjoyed being on. I really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on here, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was a blast.
On.